I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. The Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board is still mulling over applications from casino owners vying for the one remaining casino license in Philadelphia. It's been about a decade since Pennsylvania legalized casino gambling and 4 years since Sugar House opened in the Fishtown section of the city. It's now undergoing a $164 million expansion. Meanwhile, four casinos in Atlantic City have closed or are closing their doors, raising questions about market saturation and the climate for casino gambling. Coming up on Radio Times, does it make economic sense to greenlight construction for a second casino here in Philadelphia? But first, to set the stage for our discussion, Suzette Parmley, a gaming writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer, is our guest. And Suzette, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. Good morning.
Good morning. And just to recap, so Philadelphia has the option of opening another casino. They were granted two casino licenses, what, about 6, 7, 8 years ago?
In 2004, the legislation was passed, and it was mandated Philadelphia was to have two, Pittsburgh one, and one other one in one other city in Pennsylvania.
And how many people are, how many applicants are under consideration?
There were six. Now there are four. As you recall, Steve Wynn dropped out in November, and most recently Penn National dropped out in June, citing reasons that they're pursuing other licenses in all these other states, including New York right now.
And are they thinking about a downtown South Philly? Where are these potential casinos, where would they be located?
The four, two of them are in the Stadium District, very close to
in
where
South Philly.
The Phillies and Eagles play. And the two are in the city, the old Philadelphia Inquirer building at 400 North Broad Street by Bart Blatstein. And then you have 8th and Market with Ken Goldenberg and his group of developers and other interested parties in that one.
Does anyone know when the control board will be making its decision? I know they've been thinking about this for a couple of months now.
Yeah. Well, I actually made contact last night with the spokesman just to see, get a feel. There's no new update yet. And I asked, just based on what I've been doing the last couple months, are you watching closely what's happening in Atlantic City before you make your decision? And the response I got was yes. You know, we are very cautious of the oversaturation issue, which you'll get at. But I think that might definitely factor into their decision. Where what if they're going to award that Philly license?
Well, I mean, could they say no? Is it under their rights, essentially, to be able to say, no, we don't want a second casino in Philadelphia?
That's an option.
An option, meaning that it might go to another city or another area in the state?
It could, but I think what they're going to do is it's going to come down to economics, the numbers. Is it going to make sense? Is it going to cannibalize Sugar House? What is the city going to get out of this if we put another one?
Well, Sugar House is expanding, I guess, pretty dramatically, spending about $164 million. And I know it was kind of a temporary facility once it was up and running. But I noticed the CEO said there is currently too much gaming capacity in the Northeast. Now, I don't know if he was saying that because he didn't want competition for Sugar House. But how do you see Sugar House in this whole gambling mecca?
I looked at the numbers last night, the Pennsylvania for July. It's flat. It's 0.9% down. It was like 5 or 6% down in June. You look at Pennsylvania, you know, it was off to a booming start, and already this year it's showing flat to declining revenues. Connecticut is down, and I don't have to tell you Atlantic City's situation right now when you're closing four casinos in 1 year. It's definite. It is a fact. You've got so many casinos now, like I think the 27th new one opens in Baltimore next week. So you've had the saturation of, you know, 27 new casinos in the Northeast in the past decade. That's what's going on. They're all going to cut into each other. Western PA is hurting right now because of Ohio. So, you know, you reach a point of no return here.
As you said, revenue's down, but they did still make something like $3 billion. I mean, it wasn't what they made the year before.
Yes,
this is looking at
2013. It's not as much. It's still a substantial amount of money. Atlantic City is still a $2.9 billion market. But what you've done is basically you splintered the gambling market throughout the Northeast. Massachusetts is going to be opening them. Maryland is expanding to open more casinos. So there are only so many gamblers, Marty.
Well, I'm wondering, too, with the proposals in Philadelphia, is it strictly casinos, or are they also talking about restaurants and hotels and other kind of entertainment facilities as part of these proposals?
Oh, absolutely. The two in the proposed for Center City are in the $500 million-plus range, and they're they're talking about all the things you've just mentioned to bring in a different clientele in that's going to do beyond the slots and the table games. It's going to spend money in a hotel overnight. Perhaps they're here for a convention, walk down the street from the convention center, gamble, eat, take in a show, just like, you know, what Atlantic City offered for many decades before the new competition arose.
You mentioned Atlantic City several times, but I think for obvious reasons, as you said, three casinos, about one already closed this year, three about to close in the next, what, couple of weeks?
By mid-September, you're going to be down to eight casinos in Atlantic City from a high of a dozen. Just in January, you had 12.
And is that just an oversaturation? Are they responding to the fact that now Pennsylvania has legalized gambling in casinos?
Oh, I think it's been since 06, the decline. Marty, it's been an astounding 44% decline in revenue for Atlantic City since 2006.
Wow.
A big chunk of that is because of Pennsylvania. And what it is, it's a marketing contraction now. It's trying to right-size itself. You talk to any gaming analyst, they're going to tell you, there's too many. I'm sorry, we have to close these three. But if these three don't close, it's going to be three other ones. That's the fact of the matter. There's too many casinos, not enough gambling demand, not enough gamblers. They've all been spread out in these states, which used to be key feeder markets for Atlantic City, New Jersey, Maryland, and Pennsylvania, and New York.
But one has to wonder about thinking of Revel, and I guess, well, Trump has been there for a while, and Showboat, I guess, is the other one. Thinking about Revel, what were they thinking? I mean, they invested, as you said, more than $2 billion in this casino.
At the time, it sounded real good.
Did it?
It sounded real good when he got that final piece of financing in New Jersey, thanks to Governor Christie in 2012. It needed that money to kickstart construction again after almost 16 months of halted construction. It ran out of money in the middle of everything, and it was the heart of the recession. So it came out of that in 2012. Atlantic City needed an injection. Revel happened to be it. Everybody came on board, except some gaming analysts were warning it's going to cannibalize these weaker performers. That's exactly what happened. But you have to understand, too, Atlantic City has had a tremendous track record with new casinos. When Trump Taj Mahal opened in 1990 and Borgata in 2003, they were all phenomenal successes. They were expecting the same thing with Revel, but it's a different time and place now. You've got all this competition, and people don't have that kind of money anymore to be spending hours upon hours, especially seniors. And Revel was never senior-friendly just by the sheer size of it, 6.3 million square feet.
I don't even know. I can't even imagine what that looks like.
I get tired walking it.
Do you?
And I think I'm pretty active. It's a massive amount of space, and that was the problem. It just buckled under its sheer size. It could never make enough revenue to sustain that kind of operation. And they actually wanted to close it this Monday. But the gaming board and the bankruptcy judge said, give your employees two more weeks to at least pack up.
Well, we're going to be talking about this a bit later on in the show, but I can imagine someone in Philadelphia saying, oh, okay, the fact that four casinos are going to close in Atlantic City, that will be good for Philadelphia because we can sort of fill in for those people that want to gamble. And I could see others saying, no, this is a sign of saturation. If Atlantic City can't make it, then there are questions about does Philadelphia need and want and should it have a second casino?
Absolutely. I mean, you're closing four in Atlantic City. That means already the gambling demand has declined to the point where you have to shut them down. You cannot realistically keep providing that new supply of gamblers to fill all these new casinos. They're being created and developed at a rate much faster than demand can keep up now. Like I said, Baltimore opens Horseshoe next week.
And who goes to casinos? Is it older folks? Is it young people? Is it sort of across the board?
Well, you know, Revel wanted to appeal to a younger crowd with the nightclubs and the beach bars and all that stuff. And typically one-third of your market is seniors, the 55 or over crowd. But like I said, that's changing. Things are happening with people's pensions, their pay. That the economic realities are a big factor in what's going on right now. That's half the equation why these casinos are struggling so much. People don't have that kind of discretionary spending anymore like they did in 2006. Ready?
I remember, you know, years ago when casinos were opening in Atlantic City, the idea is this is going to revitalize this city along the Atlantic coast. It'll bring in money. It'll bring in investment. It'll be good for all of Atlantic City. But it looks like it created kind of two cities in one.
It definitely did, the haves and the have-nots. And it's going to be interesting to see with four vacancies on the boardwalk what's going to happen to the whole dynamics of the city. You know, that's a big chunk of their tax revenue. That's what pays for cops and firemen. And I'm going to a vigil tonight for the death of Atlantic City's service economy.
There's a vigil down there?
There's a vigil. You've got 6,500 workers going to lose their jobs starting August 31st in less than 2 weeks.
And are these
6,500 people out of work? Times that by three. Each one has three or four family members. So you're looking at over 20,000 people that are in dire straits in a matter of weeks here.
And can we assume these are people that live either in Atlantic City or within commuting distance of Atlantic City? Then?
I'd say all of South Jersey is going to be affected by this.
Well, but by that level of layoffs. I'm curious, too, about, I was reading about tax increases in Atlantic City also now has junk bond status.
Junk bond status. It cannot produce enough revenue. It has no revenue stream that it can count on with these casinos closing. And a big part of the 37% tax increase for the city that you got in the mail 2 weeks ago is because of the value devaluation of all these casinos. They're not making what they used to. It's based on income. They're not getting any, the type of property taxes they need anymore.
So they went from 12 casinos in Atlantic City to 8. Does 8 seem about right from your perspective that it can, though they can be profitable?
Well, the analysis right now is we're going to let the market decide how many casinos can be successful and profitable. So it's got to stabilize, and we're going to see if 8 can be accommodated with enough demand. If not, 1 or 2 could very well close between now and 2017. That's the prediction.
You were telling me before going on the air that, you know, summertime makes sense. That's the busy time for casinos in Atlantic City. This summer?
That's their bread and butter. It's a resort town. And unfortunately, for, 35 years, it had a lock on the summer gambling market because people went there and either have, second houses in the surrounding communities. And over 50% of its revenue comes from June, July, August, Memorial Day to Labor Day. You strip that away now because people are staying closer at home, whether Maryland or Pennsylvania, you've lost any advantage you have. And that's why this summer is why people are saying the chickens came home to roost.
The Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board, again, they're going to make a decision one way or the other. Do you have any sense of when they will make that decision? As you said, you called them last night. They're being very tight-lipped about it.
Very.
But nonetheless, it seems the clock is ticking on this decision.
Yeah. I mean, you have to think about the development aspects. It takes a year and a half to 2 years to develop a casino. Already the whole landscape is altered. There's competitive reasons. Baltimore opens next week. What's happening in Atlantic City right now. So they do have to make a decision, but I know they're watching what's going on throughout the region.
Well, on that note, Suzette Parmley, thank you once again for joining us today on Radio Time. She's gambling writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer, in a sense setting us up for our discussion and I think debate as well. After this very short break, we'll be debating about whether Philadelphia needs a second casino. Thanks very much, Suzette,
for
joining us. And you can give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We have two guests who will be joining us after this very short break. We'll be right back.
AT&T Productions, Philadelphia's all-comedy theater company, supports WHYY. Tickets are available for Alan Ayckbourn's Intimate Exchanges, starring Jennifer Childs and Anthony Lawton. A part of the 2014 Philadelphia Fringe Arts Festival, Intimate Exchanges features 8 possible outcomes and puts the audience in charge of the story. This award-winning comedy plays August 28th through September 21st at the Arcadia Stage in Arden Theater in Old City. Tickets and info at 1812productions.org.
Hi, I'm Terry O'Reilly. Photographer Chun Li talks about father figure, his exploration of fatherhood and race, inspired by the late-in-life discovery that his own father is black. That's coming up on Cue the Summer from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Some of China's wealthiest are starting to sell their homes amid a crackdown on corruption.
Stories of officials who are essentially giant landlords are legion in China. Last year, there was a political leader who was caught in Inner Mongolia. He had 33 properties in China and a house in Canada.
So what does a sell-off mean for China's economy? That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Mosco, and Pennsylvania's Gaming Control Board has yet to choose the winning applicant out of four vying for the one remaining casino license for Philadelphia. We just said goodbye to Suzette Parmley, gaming writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer, has been covering the casinos here in Philadelphia, also Atlantic City as well. Joining us now are Michael Palladino. He's lead gaming analyst for Fitch Ratings, and that's a global rating agency. Michael Palladino, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Patrick Gillespie, or Pat Gillespie, business manager for the Philadelphia Building and Construction Trades Council. And Pat, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
It's nice to be here, Maury.
And to our listeners, we want to hear from you whether you think Philadelphia should or shouldn't have a second casino. Do give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Pat, let me begin with you. You were sitting here as Suzette Parmley was describing the environment for casinos, and it's been almost 10 years since Philadelphia was awarded two casino licenses. Much has happened in the last decade. Why should it get a second casino here in Philadelphia?
I don't know. I don't know whether it will or not.
I don't know either.
But I think the legislation allows for two, that would be two revenue streams for the city of Philadelphia coffers. The interesting thing about gambling is the folks who control the financing of this are, for the most part, gamblers. It's a dynamic that, like, it's different than other developments. So they will take a shot. They're not concerned. I mean, you ask why did what happened in Atlantic City? Mm-hmm. Well, that was people. There'll be studies done with Atlantic City why they didn't sell the ocean and just tried to win it all themselves. All right, the greed or whatever. They never did really expanded into communities there. Contrast that with what we have at our Sugar House and at Parks and at Harrah's,
and Philadelphia
Harrah's in Chester. They call Philadelphia Harrah's. When Harrah's was first open, that's when I started hearing the term saturation. Now, that was open quite a while ago, but we had our two venues were being discussed. Sugar House got their permission, and they start talking about saturation, as did Parks, because what they're trying to do is limit the competition.
And you're saying that there's room?
I don't know. And who will dictate whether there's room or not will be the marketplace. If Blatstein can get financing for Broad Street, that's a wonderful development there for North Broad Street. I don't know about the other venues. I like Blatstein's idea. The others are trying to attract different clientels, and that's what the Revel did. The Revel tried to attract high rollers when there weren't any. You know, the money in Atlantic City always came from the day trade, from the day players. The people's with quarters and dollars and whatnot go down to play the slot machines. Philadelphia stopped that. Philadelphia slot machines stopped that. And people tell you that in the casinos, that's where the real money is.
And hold on to the thought. Let me get Michael Palladino in on the conversation. And one of the questions is whether there is a saturated market when it comes to casino gambling. And certainly with the development here in Pennsylvania, other states as well. Is the marketplace saturated, Michael?
There's certainly plenty of capacity to meet, you know, the current demand, particularly when you think that, you know, the casino and Baltimore is going to open imminently. There's going to be casinos in upstate New York that's going to tap the northern New Jersey market that's already being tapped by Sands Bethlehem. So it's going to penetrate that market even further. There's going to be a casino in Washington, D.C. a couple years down the road. And then, you know, given the struggles in Atlantic City that, you know, we've already talked about and it's been covered, you know, all over the media, you know, there potentially could be a push for casino gambling outside of Atlantic City, potentially at the Meadowlands, in a couple of years after the governor's five-year plan runs out. So any investment in a casino in Philadelphia is going to have to take the context of the potential for additional and not just potential, but real competition that will be coming online over the next couple of years.
Well, picking up on this notion of demand, is demand growing for casinos, or is it a kind of finite number of people, perhaps, you know, boomers, seniors who are going to play slots, perhaps younger people that like the table games? Is that a finite number of people, or is that a growing population of people? Is there any way to know that, Michael?
Yeah, we've put out a report in the last month, you know, sort of addressing the U.S. regional gaming environment and looking at some of the secular trends and challenges that face, you know, the consumers. And, you know, we're pretty concerned in terms of, you know, the headwinds that, you know, the core gambling consumer faces. You know, what we see is that there's, you know, a significant amount of saturation across, you know, markets, and you know, there's various ways to measure that. We see that wages are pretty stagnant, particularly among the lower tier players. So we see somewhat of a bifurcation of the consumer. We see a reprioritization of disposable income going more towards healthcare spending. You know, and obviously the entertainment dollar suffers potentially from that. We see the proliferation of online gambling and social gambling that potentially could eat into, you know, the core gambling market. The propensity to gamble among, you know, the younger population is a bit lower, and the core baby boomer is under a lot of pressure, you know, right now. And so you're seeing a transition from, say, a slot player to maybe somebody that's more table or more oriented. Mm. So there's a lot of challenges that we see affecting, you know, the core regional gambling properties.
Pat, let me go back to you and something that
Hold
on one second. Let me read something that you wrote in the Philadelphia Inquirer. This was a pushback against an editorial. You said, as Pennsylvania's only city of the first class with a population of nearly 2 million people, Philadelphia can easily accommodate a second casino. Those who are lobbying against it are citing dubious claims of market saturation. That may be the case in Atlantic City, but not here. Can you back that up?
Well, listen, it'll be backed up. I mean, see, there are two things going on here. If the developer, the person who has these ideas, if he can get his funding, if he can get his lending, then why are we stifling that because of a study that says, well, there's saturation here? I'm telling you, the saturation argument, I first started hearing that when we first started building the Harris Casino in Chester. That's when they start talking about saturation.
But there are many more casinos since that
time.
Yeah,
there are. And some will make it and some won't. And Wynn had a wonderful plan for Allegheny Avenue, and that would have been tremendous. As soon as New York decided to allow gambling, he pulled out because he wants to go to that marketplace, all right, and whether he winds up there or not. And Penn National wants to go to New York. So they're pulling out. People will do what they have to do with for their investments. And
you're saying that the marketplace.
I'm saying that it's kind of ironic that here I am, a guy who advocates socialization of a lot of things, saying the marketplace will dictate whether or not this can get financed, and all those factors get played in, as Mr. Palladino just said with his study. But that's real stuff, and people will figure out, well, Can we invest in this, and is it worth taking a shot? Now the difference is, people who invest in gambling are fundamentally gamblers, and so they don't mind taking a shot, and that's the difference. And as I said earlier,
well, Michael, let me go back to you picking up on what Pat just said. That essentially, that I guess if a casino operator can get financing, then someone believes that there's a market for a new casino. Does that make sense to you?
Parts of it. You know, it's not that, you know, the investors are gamblers. They're looking at a return on investment. So if they can get a return on investment.
It's gambling, pal.
Well, that's for a whole other discussion. But no, go ahead, Michael. Go ahead.
Yeah, then we can talk about, you know, all of Wall Street being.
Exactly. You know, so, yeah, we've done that show.
You know, there's obviously, you know, high yield investors, loan investors that, you know, look to this space to invest in a project that potentially can yield, you know, a 10 or 15% return when your cost of capital is in, you know, the mid-single digit range. That is a positive economic benefit. The question is, what does that do to the existing properties around it, and what is the profitability of the other properties that it might take away from and cannibalize from? So what we've seen in Atlantic City, and I think, you know, Suzette had mentioned, you know, there was 12 casinos that potentially going down to 8, there's really only 4 that are significantly profitable. And then when you look at some other markets that recently ramped up, Ohio being one, I mean, we estimate that, you know, when Ohio ramped up, it was pretty disappointing that, you know, probably more than a third of their revenue has been cannibalized from, you know, neighboring states. So what we've seen as gambling has proliferated across the U.S. over the past, you know, 10 to 20 years, we've seen legislators and supporters of new developments get more aggressive and strategically put the casinos closer to population bases and then closer to borders where they can tap into, you know, the other states, customers.
Sure, they can cross border.
You know, politically.
Yeah, go ahead, Pat. Right.
The phenomenon of gambling, you know, the exclusivity of Las Vegas, and that was Atlantic City's big competition. And Atlantic City had this exclusivity. All of a sudden, other states had great successes. They started a lottery and took the business off the bookies in the neighborhoods. And all of a sudden, they're making a lot of revenue in those things. The saturation argument, people who want to gamble will gamble. You want to make sure that if they are gambling in Pennsylvania, that it benefits Pennsylvanians. That was the argument that we had around casinos in the first place. For people to say, oh, for the panel or that the gambling control committee, whoever they are making that decision,
the gaming control board,
they should consider whether or not it's viable for Philadelphia. The legislature said that it was. I mean, that's where that came from, and that's where the authority is. And to change that, to take that casino and put it somewhere else, or not to do it at all, is, I think that's the question.
And let me just quickly reintroduce the two of you. That's Pat Gillespie, Patrick Gillespie, business manager for the Philadelphia. Pat, okay, business manager for the Philadelphia.
You can be called Marty. I can be called Pat.
You're right. Let me finish reintroducing you. Pat Gillespie, business manager for the Philadelphia Building and Construction Trades Council, here with us in our Philadelphia studio, Michael Palladino. He's a lead gaming analyst for the for Fitch Ratings, and that's a global rating agency. And we asked both of them to join us in this hour of Radio Times as the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board makes its decision about whether Philadelphia will get another casino. It's allowed to have 2 within the city limits, and there are 4 applications under consideration. And we want to hear from you. What do you think of this idea, pro or con? Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Michael, if I can go back to you and you use the word cannibalize. When a casino, though, goes in, and oftentimes they have, you know, they have a hotel associated with them or attached to them, they have bars and restaurants. What is the impact on the larger economy when a casino is located in, let's say, an urban downtown?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, one of the positive benefits of a casino is the non-gaming, you know, amenities that are potentially being offered in sort of that economic multiplier effect. So that's, you know, the proponents of gambling expansion will always point to that. You know, on an international basis, you know, you could see a difference between, say, the Macau market, which in many ways is like a huge day trip market like Atlantic City, versus Singapore, which attracts, you know, a much wider dispersion of international tourism and the non-gaming part of it. So that's something that's always attractive because you don't want to necessarily just rely on, you know, on gambling.
Right.
That said, you know, the gambling is, you know, a good part of the cash cow. When you look at Las Vegas, 35% of the revenue is gambling, 65% is non-gambling. You know, in Atlantic City, it's mostly all gambling. So in terms of a measure and how to measure saturation or the depth of the market, one number that we can look at is, you know, win per unit per day for slot machines. And in Philadelphia right now, it's somewhere around 275 or in that range, which is healthy on an average basis across markets. But when you look at other urban areas that are considering city casinos, like in Chicago, for example, they want to have a casino in the city as well. You know, the win per unit per day there is north of 400. So it just indicates that it's a much deeper market relative to the population, and that's because a lot of the positions or the number of slot machines in the market is more limited in that market than it is in Pennsylvania.
And I want to get back to you, Pat, but just a quick follow-up to you, though, Michael, and I'm thinking about all the other things that are in Philadelphia, the restaurants, the museums, the bars, the places that people go for.
The churches.
Well, maybe. The places where people go when they want to be entertained, and whether they end up living, sort of going to this self-contained casino, or whether they would wander off and go to a local restaurant, for instance. That's to you, Michael.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, they certainly would, and I think as gambling has become much more socially accepted, it's become more of a form of entertainment that's one part of, you know, going out for an evening. And, you know, even when Las Vegas, you know, transformed to be, you know, more of a convention market, that was something where they were able to access a midweek customer that they weren't able to access before. So that's certainly something that, you know, if you have a proper development that accentuates, you know, the non-gaming parts of, you know, the offering, then that's something that can be a benefit to the surrounding economy.
To you, Pat, is one of the reasons for your support of a second casino in Philadelphia because it would mean jobs? I mean, you're the business manager of the Philadelphia Building and Construction Trades Council. Huh? That would mean more jobs for your union members.
Listen, anything that generates commerce is good for the building trades unions. Anything. Right now, we're expanding the Sugar House. The Sugar House that was promised to be a $750 million project won't ever get there for whatever reason, but they're starting to put a nice addition to that. Parks Casino does well. We have a lot of jobs up there. We have a lot of jobs at Harrah's, construction and reconstruction and maintenance jobs. So all of this contributes to commerce. People like Bart Blatstein aren't dumb people. I mean, they know how to market.
And he's one of the
developers. Right. Goldenberg is the other guy on Market Street. They have a vision here, and they know how to finance that vision. And what's the fee, the fee for the license to Pennsylvania? It's in $50 million or something like that.
It's a lot of money, yeah.
So these people are putting up some serious dough. They think this can work. It's, you know, and they're pretty sure of it. Now, the one problem that I have with what happened in Atlantic City was each one was their own little entity. They never got out into the neighborhood. They never sold the ocean. They never, you know, had the beach. Of course, it's second guessing, but I used to resent having you go in to Atlantic City, and we'd go to get a hoagie at the White House. You know, that, I mean, and people, no, let's get to this restaurant. No, let's go to Atlantic City. Enjoy. Let's get some saltwater taffies. You know.
So you're saying they sort of segregated.
I'd say, yeah, but
isolated,
and that was their marketing strategy.
The
Las Vegas. Most of their money comes from, a large portion of their money comes from, not from gambling, from other revenue sources.
Well, let's take a very short break, and we got some callers that want to join us. We've got some email comments as well, and we are talking about the fact that the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board has yet to choose the winning applicant out of four vying for one remaining casino license for Philadelphia. There's some controversy and some opinions on both sides of this issue, whether the city needs or wants or should have a second casino. Talking with Pat Gillespie, business manager for the Philadelphia Building and Construction Trades Council, and Michael Palladino, lead gaming analyst for Fitch Ratings, and that's a global rating agency. We've got calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Crozier Keystone's bariatric surgery program supports WHYY. Located in the heart of Delaware County, Crozier Keystone's comprehensive bariatric program provides a full surgical complement of advanced weight loss solutions to people throughout the region. Among them, a host of procedures that, in many cases, can be performed in a minimally invasive manner with the help of the Da Vinci robotic system. The Crozier Keystone Bariatric Surgery Program, over 1,000 procedures performed. More information at CrozierKeystone.org.
All 552 episodes of The Simpsons will be broadcast in the longest single-series marathon in history, beginning Thursday. On the next Fresh Air, our TV critic David Bianculli has an appreciation and will feature interviews with The Simpsons creator Matt Groening, as well as several cast members.
Blah, 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 blah.
And writers, join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Michael Brown is dead, another unarmed black teenager. casualty of what?
You have young males encountering a person who knows that black lives don't matter as much as whites.
What is happening in this country, and do we share the urgency of a problem that apparently could happen in any community in America? Next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow. Just a recap here. Philadelphia was granted licenses for two casinos when casino gambling was legalized here in Pennsylvania. The Gaming Control Board is considering proposals for a second casino for the city and could be making a decision sometime soon. So does Philadelphia need a second casino? Is the market saturated? Are casinos good for a local economy? And is Atlantic City a cautionary tale? Again, talking with Michael Palladino and with Pat Gillespie. We've got calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. I have an email from Christopher Stewart. He says, I live halfway between Philly and Atlantic City, so I really don't have a dog in this fight. I serve employees who are now applying for jobs in Philadelphia now as a result of the layoffs in Atlantic City. Don't do it. The world doesn't need more casinos. Don't put chips down on gambling as a way for a city to thrive. You will regret it. Michael, if I can toss that to you, do you think Christopher Stewart is correct there?
Yeah, to a degree. You know, whether or not it needs additional supply is certainly debatable. And even if the new casino can potentially be profitable and generate a decent return on investment, the question is, what does that do for the other properties in Philadelphia and then in the surrounding region? So that's the question that, you know, legislators are, and regulators are going to have to answer, is not necessarily can this one project be successful. It's what is the entirety of the impact to other properties, and for Pennsylvania, it's going to be other properties within Philadelphia. What is the impact it's going to do there, and is it going to be a net positive or negative?
And you're saying we really don't know the answer to that question?
No, it depends on the size, the scope, and what what the ultimate project is going to be. I think it's clear that it'll have an impact on the existing properties that are in the market, but to what degree, right. It remains to be seen.
Go ahead, Pat.
Look at Delaware Avenue, Marty. We have Sugar House down there, and we can't build apartments fast enough on Delaware Avenue. You have the Fishtown community, you have Northern Liberties, you have other places. So there is a synergy that's created around, and that has been created. So the experience that we have had in Philadelphia is a positive one. Prior to the Sugar House, what was on Delaware Avenue? You had abandoned warehouses. So you posit this on Broad Street, North Broad Street, which is, of course, my favorite.
I hear you. That's your favorite, yes.
But Market Street is the other one. What happens there? I mean, there's only positive things can happen when you have an influx of investment in a community.
Let me get Tom from, looks like, Bluebell to join our conversation. Hi, Tom. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I want to tackle, I'm a big free market guy, so I want to go a step further on Pat's free market ideas. That even if the studies are right and the market is saturated, that doesn't mean the government should be telling somebody they can't open up a business in that industry. Does that mean if some bureaucrats decide that we have enough restaurants in Philadelphia that I'm not allowed to open a restaurant because I got to worry about taking business from the existing restaurants? I mean, if I've got a better idea and better food or a better service, and I can provide a service better, I ought to be able to open up and take business from whoever I can take it from. And I don't really see how you can justify that just because it's, why is it only casinos that have to answer to this and not any bakery or a hardware store or anything else that opens up has to justify that they're not taking business from somebody else?
Well, Tom, I appreciate the call. Let me give Pat Gillespie, who raised his hands in hurrah when you talk. Go ahead, Pat.
I'm glad people grasp what I'm saying. Is this will be determined by the marketplace. And by the way, Tom, they're for the privilege of doing this, they're paying the state $50-some million. To get a permit. So it's not, this is a serious endeavor. This isn't like opening up the bakery, and making a better cake, but pretty much it is. Your analogy is is accurate, and the law allows for this. The law allows for two, and people have predicated budgets and we'll put it, aspirational budgets on revenue streams in Philadelphia based on two casinos. So there's a whole lot of things riding on this.
Do you see it that way, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, the parallel I might draw, though, is, you know, what if you mentioned restaurants, what if you want to open a Subway, you know, and you have a franchise company like that? They protect their markets, and they don't put them right next to each other on purpose because there is, you know, a depth of the market that they're trying to ensure for each of their franchisees. So, yeah, it's a free market, and that's for sure. You know, but, you know, what you need to consider is what is the impact on the existing facilities, because ultimately you're trying to grow the net tax revenue base and the economic benefit. So just because it's allowed now, you know, you still need to feel comfortable that that's going to be the case, not just because somebody is putting projections out there that, you know, that seem to be reasonable. You might remember that when online gaming was introduced in New Jersey, you know, the governor was talking about $1.2 billion of revenue. We initially came out with an estimate of $200 to $300 million for this year, and we just lowered that to $120 to $130 million. So, you know, it doesn't always hit the expectations.
Does that tell us something about if online gambling isn't as profitable as people were hoping? Does that also lead us back to the saturation question, Michael?
To a degree, it had an impact. I mean, that's what held some of the supply in the Atlantic City marketplace for some time before they started closing down. So there was the prospect of online gambling that was attached to the casino licenses. Once you saw that ramp up be disappointing, then some of these casinos were probably more apt to close their physical doors than they were previously.
But are there states, I don't know if how clearly Pennsylvania is doing this, but certainly it seemed in Atlantic City the government was quite involved, including the Christie administration, in helping out these casinos. So it's not an entirely clearly, strictly, and only kind of a business proposition. I'm back to you, Michael.
Yeah, no, it's a regulated industry. So it's not like something that is unregulated where you can just open a business. It is something that is double taxed. You get taxed on an income basis, and you get taxed on your gambling revenue. So it is something that is heavily regulated, and that's you know, one of the risks of the industry. You know, we're in the business of Fitch Ratings of measuring risks, and you know, that's certainly something that this industry has as part of a dynamic when you look at it relative to others, like, say, restaurants.
Did you want to add something?
Well, yeah, the revenue streams are critical for a state like Pennsylvania. I mean, they've anticipated these revenue streams, and they're spending the money for some great purposes. Now, unfortunately, we have a whole lot of more needs than we do revenues, and finding revenues in the state is a challenge to every elected official. So they passed this thing. They enabled people to gamble. They're permitted that. And, you know, it's a regulated industry, but certain people can't do it. You know, certain people are not allowed to participate in it if you have a record, those kinds
exactly.
of things. And they try to keep it above all, above board. The most important thing that citizens should remember is that, in this case, the House always wins. And the House, in this instance, is the state and the government. You know, they're getting their revenue stream from these things, and that's the bottom line.
And these things that we're talking about, casino gambling, and whether Philadelphia should get a second casino. And again, we want to hear from you. And again, that phone number 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We have looks like Patrick calling us from Mount Airy. Go ahead, Patrick. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Morning.
It doesn't seem to me that a union representative is an unbiased, renders an unbiased perspective on the building of casinos. Secondly, I've lived in the city for 65 years, except for the 3 years that I was in the service. I don't know anyone who wants more casinos in Philadelphia. That's really all I have to say.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, to you, Patrick, from Mount Airy, and to our listeners, we had Pat Gillespie on because he is a proponent of and a supporter, and he had a piece in the Philadelphia Inquirer, and we were frankly looking for that point of view as we paired him with Michael Palladino, who has some cautions about the idea of the saturation or even a second casino here in Philadelphia. So just to
does it seem like there should be somebody who is not pro-casino there?
There should be someone who is not pro. Well, what we're doing is we're looking at the sort of economic questions, and that's why we have Michael Palladino on. And in his report, he talks about market saturation. He talks about the fact that there are stagnant wages among some of the more, the folks that tend to use the slot machines. People are rethinking their disposable income because of the recession. So these are all cautions about why a casino might not be a good idea here in Philadelphia. So, Patrick, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me get, we have an email from Larry. We don't need more casinos. We need more quality schools and community endeavors, cleanup co-ops, recreation opportunities. And to you, Pat, I mean, people often, this is a city with great needs, as we know, including needs for education. And I think some of the critics of casinos think, you know, here's all this money people are spending on gambling and building these palaces to gambling. Meanwhile, you've got children who, you know, are in crowded classrooms and find that very disturbing.
Okay, well, if they're concerned about that, then they should look at the revenue streams and maybe have someone suggest that those revenue streams are some of that money is dedicated to education. Yeah, this isn't, you're not spending government money here. This isn't, as a matter of fact, the developers here, these proponents of gambling are being taxed, or the permit to do this, for permission to do this, they're paying $51 or $55 million. I don't remember the exact number. That seems to be an astronomically large number for permission to build a casino. Plus, the revenue stream that's anticipated from those things, and granted, some of them have been astronomically high and suggest a lot of nonsense, but they are constant, and no one's losing money in Pennsylvania in those casinos. As a matter of fact, Pennsylvania is doing very well.
Well, the gamblers that are losing are losing money, but
Marty, that's the choice people make. You know, I mean, we can't make this a religious argument now, or I'm going to lose.
Well, fair enough. Let me go back to you, Michael Palladino, and you mentioned lottery, and I wonder even most states, maybe all states, have lotteries at this point. How do we factor lotteries in when we think about who's going to casinos and whether we are at the saturation point?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that, we've looked at, and, we do feel there is some level of crossover at the lower tier player. As lotteries have become more advanced and the instant tickets have become, higher stakes, we see that there is some level of crossover. So there is some convergence going on in terms of lottery, social gambling, online gambling, and casino player, particularly at the lower end. So that's something that, we get concerned with. Lottery has continued to grow slowly, but it has grown consistently. And it is something that, will also eat at the entertainment dollar of the consumer. So it is something that we point out and we do get concerned about, particularly for the lower-end consumer.
Let me get Ryan from North Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Ryan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, yeah. I just wanted to make a comment with some of the people calling in about we don't want another casino in the city. We need jobs in this city. We need more revenue for the school system. Can't depend on the state because they couldn't even pass the tax for the cigarettes to get the money that they were supposed to give to the state this year. So I just don't understand why, if the state doesn't have any investment, why there would be a risk to losing jobs or revenue when there really couldn't be, even if they build it and it doesn't do well in the next couple of years.
Ryan, let me give Pat Gillespie a chance to respond to your comments.
Well, I agree with you, Ryan, of course. That's the sobering thing. Are a lot of people in Pennsylvania are getting elected to office these days with a promise of they're not going to do anything. They're going to shrink government at a time when we have all all these needs for government. So we're in a dilemma. So here we have a situation where there's a promise of a revenue stream to help, and it's already enacted in legislation. And I think they should just get on with it.
Let me go back to you, Michael. We're almost out of time here, and even go back to Atlantic City. And I was talking with Suzette Parmley from the Philadelphia Inquirer, who's covered Atlantic City quite extensively. And as a result of the closing of these casinos, you know, thousands of people are going to be losing their jobs in the next couple of weeks. There will be tax increases in Atlantic City. The city's bond status is now junk status. It seems that, you know, if this doesn't work out, and we don't know what the Gaming Control Board is going to decide, but if it doesn't work out, there are serious consequences, it seems, if a second casino goes bust in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, Atlantic City is certainly going to be pointed to by a lot of the anti-gambling contingent, you know, in terms of what could go wrong. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of, you know, issues with what went wrong over the last 25 years. You know, Pat mentioned, you know, probably the main thing is that they never accentuated the beach, which was their, you know, competitive advantage. Yet, you know, Las Vegas accentuated the desert, go figure, you know, so,
made golf courses there.
Yeah, it's two different dynamics that the markets went toward, and Atlantic City, when it had a monopoly, just focused on, you know, the day tripper, the senior citizen that they could bust in, and they treated gambling like a commodity. And at the end of the day, gambling is a commodity, a slot machine, a table game. You can do that anywhere. You can do it online now in New Jersey. So if you're not offering something else to that consumer to get you there, it's a much, much more competitive environment today than it was, you know, 20 years ago, obviously. And so that will be the challenge for a new casino in Philadelphia. Can they offer that additional amenity beyond just gambling?
Well, on that note, Michael Palladino, lead game analyst for Fitch Ratings, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
My pleasure.
And Pat Gillespie, thank you for joining us
as well.
Box
me out again. I don't get the last word.
No, you don't. Business manager for the Philadelphia Building and Construction Trades Council. And we began our conversation with Suzette Parmley, gaming writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program, including a conversation we started earlier today on Facebook. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back. And do stay with